Whew, this certainly was a season 7 episode, wasn't it?
But it's season 6!
What's your point?
It was a season 7 episode.
No, because this was actually like, you know... Its heart was in the right place.
I guess you could say it's a clever idea. It's just boring.
It's supposed to be a fun idea, not clever, I don't think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be really entertaining and fun. And yeah, it's just kind of like, okay, when's something going to happen? Oh, nothing actually happens. Oh, okay, there was actually no stakes to this whatsoever.
Except maybe getting shot.
He's a fucking Klingon. You could riddle him with a machine gun. He would be fine. Bitch has redundant organs. Whatever.
I'd kind of like to see a bullet bounce off of Worf's forehead.
Pew!
That should have been the resolution to the episode.
Yeah, they shoot him in the head and it fucking bounces off. That would be rad.
Like if Star Trek The Next Generation had invented bullet time, just so they could show the bullet slowly bouncing off of his head.
Yeah, like Man of Steel when it bounces off his eyeball, but it's on his tortoise head.
But it's actually in something good. No, but see, Mickey, if you had watched the episode yesterday, we could have, you know, switched it up for something else.
I'm still fine with covering it. I'm just thinking it was just boring.
Oh, okay.
I was expecting more of a romp.
Ah.
And it was more of a slow walk through a swamp.
I think that's why they put the everybody's day off subplot in.
The B plot of Geordi's beard.
Okay, let's save some content for the podcast, okay?
We're gonna need it.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're gonna be sitting here about 2 or 3 minutes at a time just in dead silence waiting for something to happen to talk about.
Well,
this episode is so long, feels so long, that Geordi beard was full grown by the end of it. No? All right.
No.
Worth a shot.
Podcasts, The Final Frontier. These are the Star Trek episodes of the podcast Superhero Time. Our continuing mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek. Alienate even more listeners. And boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Real ladies have nacelles, boys.
Hey, Mickey.
Why, I'm no spy. I'm just a plain, simple tractor trailer.
Snot.
Every time I poop, it's just going to float around.
And Fort Max.
I'm gay, and I'm a little straight for Bashir.
This episode was so long, it went past the sigmoid colon.
Ha ha! Anatomy!
So this week on that one episode of Star Trek...
All praise Dukat. He's going to make Cardassia strong again.
No, we're watching Next Generation.
In any case, let's check back in Season 7 and see how that worked out for them.
Right.
But yes, it's our second week of Holodeck Misadventures, and I guess from the reactions of my cast here, you could say it was a misadventure.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like so much fun.
Unfortunately, the podcast safety protocols were turned off, and we picked an episode that was boring.
No. I want to refute that a little bit. The podcast safety protocols were ignored, and you picked an episode that you hadn't watched recently.
Yeah, we did a manual override.
No. I picked the episode I hadn't watched at all.
Okay, that also counts as not watching recently, you know. Like, we have these protocols for a reason. We pick episodes that a couple of us are familiar with so that there's a buffer here. But two of you assholes, I'm not going to say which ones, Mickey and Scott, suggested, hey, I don't know about this episode, let's watch that instead of the other one, which we know is proven good.
It's only been about 25 years since I've seen this episode. Whatever.
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't hear any complaints coming from Fort Max.
I haven't seen most of these episodes before.
I don't know what Star Trek is.
V, who clearly knew better.
I'm old enough to know better, but still too young to care.
That's
why we deliver a quality podcast.
Yeah, and I'm way too old to care about Alexander. Oh, my God.
That's good, Scott. That's why you're not...
Due to content restrictions beyond our control, we are unable to bring you the remainder of this sentence. We apologize for any inconvenience.
517.
So sidestepping that slightly. So hey, Mickey had a great tweet today about Alexander, which I'll let him repeat if he would choose to, because it's...
I don't remember how to phrase it, so I'll let you do it.
Oh, something to the effect of Alexander is the Wesley of... Alexander's or something.
Alexander is the chibi moon of Wesley's.
That's what it was. The chibi moon. That's right.
Scott's interpretation is interesting too, though, that Alexander is the Wesley of Alexander's.
Yeah.
Because if you just stop for a second and think about and try to parse that.
Marvel at it. Marvel into the abyss.
Although Alexander Wesley Alexander sounds like someone who should have a sweater tied over them and be playing tennis.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to remember that next time you need, like, a FOP character.
You can't say that. It's racist.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you can't just call people that.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of WAP. Never mind. FOP is fine.
I'm trying to think. Did I forget one?
Let me check my tattoos. No, it's not on here. So I did see Doctor Strange this weekend.
I was almost forced to see it today, but I escaped.
It was really good. I enjoyed the shit out of it.
Wait,
Ant-Man.
How did you escape?
My dad had an earache and didn't want to go.
Oh.
And he was the one that was dragging me out to see it, so.
At least in that case, you probably wouldn't have had to pay for the ticket.
That's true. I just had to pay with my time.
Yeah. Yes, but also, it can't be as bad as paying with the time you paid for Age of Extinction.
That's your fault.
Not entirely.
I wasn't going to see it until you said, I want to come down and see it. I'm like, okay, well, I'll do it to hang out with XV.
At least you're not Paladin.
I say that to myself every day.
Yeah, first thought in the morning and last thought before you go to sleep.
I mean, there is not time enough in anybody's life to see Age of Extinction more than once.
I've seen it zero times.
Good, you've saved yourself 3 or 4 days.
Also, hey, Mickey, I thought you were going to move out eventually. And you say your dad was going to go take you see this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mickey did move out. The problem is his dad eventually followed him and moved in.
This sounds like an 80s sitcom. Who's the dad?
He's living in the improvised shed in the backyard that used to be Mickey's awning.
Oh, my God. That's a violation. Of human rights.
There's no such thing.
Oh, this podcast is getting deep all of a sudden. Oh, okay, well, again, we'll do anything to avoid watching this episode.
Even allude to politics.
Yeah. Let's go to politics. Let's do that. Seems like it'd be safer and more fun.
We need more of that in our lives right now.
Yeah, we do. Sweet Jesus.
Everything's fine.
Now, what I would like to see is Brent Spider dressed up as a can
Brent Spider? Whoa.
Brent Spider? No. Absolutely not.
Huh.
What?
Cosmic Duck? Please draw.
Yes. Photoshop or whatever it is you do.
Magic. It's pure magic. That's what Cosmic Duck does.
Yes. Of course, there was that one time I turned Don into a Ferengi. That was pretty good, too. And into Zordon. Zordon.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that one, actually. That one actually rings a bell. Mm.
Don's not a Ferengi, though. He's like a...
You've never seen him in a convention dealer room.
Oh.
That's where that whole thing came from. Don's much too tall to be a Ferengi. Don's very tall.
Oh.
Sir, we don't take gold press Latinum. We need American dollars.
I've only seen Don from the neck up, so, you It's hard to judge someone's height.
Was there like a bathroom stall, like wall between you two, or what?
No, it's from RFC, which is a video podcast.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
It's the high dollar podcast. They can afford to have video. We can't.
So, Scott.
Yes, sir.
I'm just curious.
I bet you
are. I've never been to California, so I don't know how things work out there. But how many bathroom stalls do you visit where people's heads are visible at the top of them?
Well, it depends on how tall they are, you know.
The question remains, though, like, how many times have you encountered that in your life?
Well, normally their heads stick out through a little hole in the side of it.
I'm just going to mention how hilarious it would be to have just like, all toilet stalls have the head revealed up top. So you have to see everybody's faces as they're squeezing out loaves.
Hey!
So they're trying to wash your hands. You can see them behind you in the mirror.
No, I think
staring
I think,
at you intently.
I think the sinks should be reoriented so they're facing toward the stalls.
Like they're attached to the doors.
No, there's still like, no, it's just a row of sinks that are basically freestanding and they're pointed toward the stalls, so you have no choice but to look in that direction.
I think we should arrange urinals in like a column so like everyone is facing towards each other like a circle jerk, only you're pissing into a urinal.
I want to say that's actually a thing somewhere.
Yeah, it's like
in Europe, I think, somewhere.
So it's like pissing into a bird bath.
That sounds like Europe, probably France.
Somewhere in Europe,
man, fuck Portugal.
Somewhere in Europe, there are the outdoor urinals. Where
they're called trees.
Thinking of Venice.
No, those are nature's urinals. No, it's basically like a little one person stall that you go into, and it's just a urinal out in the middle of the street.
Is that the one that had the little stall doors? Yeah, I think I've seen those.
They're like a cylinder kind of.
Right. They look like one of the survival tubes in like Fallout or something, the Fallout video game.
Well, here in America, we perfected the trough urinal, and you know,
yes,
that's the pinnacle of technology right there. Everybody just line up and piss into a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really a trough, then. That's a bucket.
Well, a trough is a bucket. It's just like a long bucket.
But what about the wall urinal?
Too fancy.
You don't really see those outside of schools, anyway.
Government buildings.
Yeah.
Well, which is a school. School's a government building, so I guess it's just all government buildings.
Speaking of school bathrooms.
Down memory lane. Oh, what?
There's a church in town that used to be an old elementary school that closed down, but then the church bought it. And we had a funeral there one time and had to use the bathrooms. So I go to the bathroom, and they never converted the bathrooms outside of being sized for elementary school students.
I think I remember this story.
I'm
like
used.
Trying to take a shit, and like the sides of the walls are like touching my shoulders, and my knees are above my waistline.
Although they say that's a healthier way to, like, that's healthier posture for.
Well, yes, but it's very unnerving.
Like they even sell those stools to have in your bathroom at home, so your legs are oriented correctly.
I don't like feeling claustrophobic when I'm taking a shit. It makes me feel like I'm going to be in a horror movie and like something's going to like walk into the bathroom with like claws dragging across the tiles and I'll be trapped.
See, I would be more worried about like you're in that stall, you've taken your dump. For some reason, the toilet won't flush. And then at the end, you find that you're stuck. You can't get up and move and escape it.
My God.
And then the school bell rings and you didn't wear your pants. Right. And there's a test today.
If you're taking a shit, I would hope you're not wearing your pants.
Well, there's a zipper.
Yeah, I'm wearing them on my head like everybody else does. You take them off, you put them on your head so they don't lay on the ground. I mean, just that's
no,
what everybody.
No, if you put your
right?
pants backwards, then you just undo the fly and you can just poop out the back.
Yeah. You extend your anus out like a proboscis, and then you just squeeze it out.
Yours doesn't.
Yeah, no, mine's fine. Anything to talk about.
Prolapse long enough, you can control the prolapse.
Oh my God. When I say pro, I mean professional.
Professional lapse.
Yes. Professional Superhero lapse. Time presents that one episode of Star Trek, A Lapse in Professionalism.
Or as we like to call it, prolapse. Terrible.
So, shall we Star Trek?
Yep. Guess yeah, who's up this week?
Eventually.
Scott? Was it me?
Yes, yep. Because, right. Yes, it's you because Mickey's my favorite.
Well, that's that was the last episode.
Sure.
All right, whatever. Fine. Okay.
That just means Mickey gets to do a Voyager episode next week.
Ha ha ha, fuck you.
Well, it was his suggestion, so he might as well do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you bathe in that. All right, Captain's Log, Stardate, blah-de-blah-de-blah-da. We're in orbit around some brown planet, and we're going to meet with a...
This planet is called Deinonychus 7. That's fucking awesome.
Because that means there's at least six more of them out there.
That's a planet full of dinosaurs. The big velociraptors running around.
Yeah, it looks like a gas giant to me. So
Jurassic World?
Yes. Wait, no.
Does that mean Chris Pratt's on it?
Maybe he's shirtless.
Okay, we'll give you that. So whatever, they're going to meet with the starship Biko, which is for a resupply run, but they've been delayed for 48 hours. So they got 2 days to fuck off and do nothing, and everyone's excited about it. So we got into Picard's personal quarters, which looked pretty rad, I got to say, and he is playing the Resican flute from Inner Light, which is awesome, I think. He's also...
Flute.
No, that's the Resican fruit, I'm sure. He's also wearing the gray and black uniform.
It's
casual.
It's his undershirt from his suede jacket.
Yeah.
I hate that uniform.
Really? I thought it looks cool. Why don't you like about it?
Because it just doesn't really work. The jacket, the different material of it, the way it's open in the front.
Really?
Look, if Kirk could have that, you know, relaxed wraparound thing to wear on the Omnis, I think Picard can have, like, a classy Starfleet smoking jacket.
Thank you.
I just don't feel that any of the design aspects of it really work. It just looks unnatural and unfinished.
Now, you want to know how much of a nerd I was when I was 9 years old? The Playmates Star Trek toy line, the first assortment of that had a Picard in that uniform, and it was, I think, 2 or 3 years before they released one in a standard uniform. And that just bugged me because he was different.
Okay.
Autism's so adorable at that age.
Isn't it, though?
So anyway, so fashion decisions aside, I think it looks cool. XP thinks it looks cool. That's all that matters.
Fort Max, what do you think?
It looks weird.
Thank
God
you.
God damn it. We need a fifth. We need someone to be a tiebreaker. So
I
anyway.
Break the tie. My vote counts twice.
What are you, Pennsylvania? All right. So in walks Data and Geordi. And I honestly thought that just Geordi was dirty. I didn't know what was going on. So Geordi is looking a little scruffy there. And these two dorks have the bright ideas. Well, we have 2 days off. Let's take the engines and power systems offline and do diagnostics. Whoopty shit.
Oh, it's better than that.
We're going to hook Data's brain to the computer and see if he can run the ship from his mind.
Right.
Card's like, that's rad. Do it.
Yeah. He's totally like, yeah. That sounds awesome. Get the fuck out. Why are you telling me? Just go do it. It's awesome.
I can understand why they'd want to do it, because that way they'd have a ship's computer that would actually be useful.
I like how Geordi starts going to say, well, he could run this, he could run that, he can do this. Because yeah, I fucking get it, dude.
We might
even be able
to
get him
to flush all the toilets at once.
Right.
What toilets?
We just wanted to see what happens.
I thought the D actually had toilets.
It has one.
Just one.
Yeah, according to the Akutagram, there's one.
The future is very advanced. They can, you know, the one bathroom can serve the entire crew.
God. The little mini transporter inside of it does a lot of work.
Yeah, you just have to be within, like, you know, 50, 75 feet of the bathroom, and, you know, you're good to go.
Whether you want it to or not. That's why all the turbolifts route past that area. So every time you're on a turbolift, like, wow. Oh, okay, it's gone.
The only problem is that you can't use the bathroom when the ship is at warp.
Yeah, I think that's been established in canon. Okay, whatever. So Picard tries to go back to playing his flute. Now Beverly comes in with her smarmy-ass look, and he can't be mad at her because he'll pout for 2 weeks.
Or send Pulaski back.
Oh, yeah, sweet Jesus. So she's like, oh, you're going to be in this play, right? And he's like, yes. She's like, don't
but
worry.
But I can't act.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not a very good actor.
Wink.
Wink at the camera.
Then Beverly's all like, well, it doesn't matter. It's not even a big part. You only have two lines. Picard's like, oh.
Yeah, which is funny because he didn't want to do it. But now that she told him he has a minor part, now he's pissed that he's got a minor part. What a petty bitch. Jeez, Picard.
Well, it's not like he can keep playing that flute of his during the play.
But basically he's learned that now it's going to be a waste of his time for no good reason.
Right. Because who wants to hang out with these assholes and this crew?
You have to think of it from the perspective, too, like, he's the captain of the ship. It's kind of embarrassing if the captain of the ship has the smallest part in the play.
I guess.
But is it the smallest part?
I'm pretty sure they all know he doesn't have the smallest part, considering the bedwear that he wears. So anyway, he takes one little toot on his flute, and the door chimes again. And in walks Worf, who does apologize for interrupting.
But he wants to start alphabetizing things on his break.
Yeah, he's like, I can manually move the matter to the antimatter. Could I do that? I mean,
I'm going to check the logs for spacing errors.
I'll proofread your personal logs. So he's just literally coming up with anything to do, any work. Picard picks up on this very quickly and goes, dude, what are you doing? You have 2 days. Go enjoy yourself. Stop trying to find yourself to do work. Get out of here, Shaggy.
Nothing's going on. Let the junior officers handle things for a couple of days. That's what we have them for.
Right. We don't run this entire ship like the six of us. We have 400 people on this ship.
Although Star Trek 3 would have you believe that, you know, 4 or 5 people can run a whole starship.
Well, it would also lead you to believe that some Star Trek movies were good, too, so whatever.
Yeah, sure. 3 or 4 people can run a starship if the end result is a starship blowing the fuck up.
But they did that on purpose!
I kind of think that would happen even not on purpose, though.
Well, possibly.
All right, so then we cut down. Picard gets to go back to blowing his little woodwind. And we cut to everybody's favorite character, Alexander, playing the biggest goddamn Game Boy I've ever seen in my
He's
life.
He's playing a lunchbox.
Look at this thing.
I know, but I've done that before.
That was a sad childhood.
I didn't have a Game Boy, so I'd have to draw one in the lunchbox and pretend.
You must have gone through a lot of lunchboxes.
Well, every time you change games, you got to get a new lunchbox.
Right. You must have gone through a lot of lunchboxes.
Yep.
Look, like, I was already depressed enough we have to watch this episode. Now you're telling stories like this.
I didn't have a Game Boy until I was 35.
But you're only, like, 32 years old.
I know.
What the shit? All right, so Alexander's laying on the ground playing his Game Man. Worf. I like how Worf walks in and Alexander, like... Worf walks in and Alexander.
It's the Cadillac of game systems.
It's the Escalade of portable gaming. It comes with a backpack you have to plug it into.
Oh, it's the Sega Nomad.
Well, Alexander Lankman will play and take the warp core offline then.
Screen has 7 colors.
He just has to be careful not to play it while the ship's under attack because it might explode at him.
Just powered by EPS conduits. Electroplasma system. So so as soon as Worf gets in, Alexander like bolts straight up because apparently he'll get yelled at and beaten for laying on the floor like an animal.
No, I think he's laying on the floor like an animal because Worf won't let him on the furniture.
So
down.
Worf never really did understand this whole parent thing.
He keeps talking with Data about his cat, and Data doesn't figure out that he's using it to rape his child. It's all Data's fault. So anyway, he pops down in the chair, looks miserable, and goes, ugh, no, I have time to play your stupid game. To which Alexander is just overjoyed that he's get to play Wild West with his dear old dad.
And Worf's, fuck, I've got to be a father.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I actually assumed that Klingons would actually beat nothing.
Did your cat knock something over?
Yes, the cat did it. The little fucker. Yeah, stupid cat.
Did you knock the cat over?
Credits. Erpa derpa derp. Okay, so we're back from credits. And we're in a Wild West town that is in no way in Southern California with the giant green pine trees.
California's in the West.
No, Californians think they're the Wild West. They're really not, though.
Okay, so there's this thing called a compass.
Yeah,
no,
you use
it's
it
not, look, I understand what.
And the starboard side of the compass.
Go on.
That's the east.
Okay.
But on the port side, that's the west. Mm. And California is full of ports.
It's true.
Ergo, it's west.
No, but I kind of get what Scott's saying. It's sort of like how Florida is geographically south, but it's not southern.
Right.
Right. It's just crazy.
Yeah, yes. And old.
California's that way, too. Is that they like to think of themselves as being, oh, we're the Wild West. No, the fuck you aren't.
Wyoming bullshit. Says hi.
All right. So we're at a sound stage Wild West set, painfully so. And Worf and Alexander come straddling in their get-up. Apparently, Worf is the sheriff and Alexander is the deputy.
And Worf's response is, what do I have to do to end this quickly?
Right. Now, one thing I'd like to point out, they do call it the Ancient West instead of the Old West. So apparently in 300 years, something becomes ancient?
Yes.
Well, okay. There was a new Old West that happened after that, so they differentiate them. See, after the Eugenics Wars, there was a second Old West that started. And the for a while, it's called it the New West until it just became
the West.
And then
the New Old West.
Right.
Kind of like New Coke.
See, in the early 21st century, when Oregon, Washington, and California seceded from the country.
Which they're trying to do.
That's a joke.
I know.
You stupid asshole.
See, well, all we need to happen is we need the Native Americans to call up magic back.
Oh, now see, that would be rad. Now we start getting to
and then they raise the dragons up.
Yeah. And then the goblinization.
Yes.
All right.
Isn't that how Troll 2 started?
That's how puberty was for me. So anyway, so Alexander explains to his dad, look, we're the lawmen. He's like, oh, so we're in law enforcement. We cut down to engineering, where Geordi is plugging Data's skull into the machine using...
I like that Worf gets excited about getting to do his job in his time off.
Yes!
Oh, this is just like work. I'm okay with this now.
Right. I didn't really put that together, but yeah, that makes perfect sense. Oh, this episode was directed by Patrick Stewart, so blame him for the pacing. Okay, so Geordi and Data are down in engineering. They plug Data's skull into the main computer, apparently. And they're having a little chit-chat, and they have this cute little thing about, oh, I'm not used to seeing you, or I never get used to seeing you this way, Data, with his head all flipped open and his circuits exposed. And Data's like...
confused by his beard.
Yeah. Like, what?
And
what?
Vaguely insulting of it.
Right.
So you're doing this again, huh?
Yeah.
How long?
Well, you're really proud of being a mammal, aren't you? Stupid mammals. Derp a derp a derp. Okay. There's a lot of silence and pauses and stretching in this episode. Is anybody else see that?
Yep.
Okay. Well, we got to fill the gaps, guys. Come on.
Speaking all right, so we cut back. Gaps.
So we cut back down to a gap that desperately needs to be filled. So there's a can girl up on a balcony in the Old West.
No, Scott, that's a whore. Intro quote.
Oh yeah, I see the family resemblance now.
Thank you.
So she drapes her leg over the railing, and Worf's like, "What the fuck?" And Alexander's like, "Oh yeah, Commander Barclay helped program this," and he's like,
"Lieutenant Barclay."
Whatever. Nerd.
Commander Barclay.
Actually, they say Mr. Barclay.
Yeah.
So, whatever. So, Worf is like, remind me to kick his ass later.
Remind me to make him extremely uncomfortable later.
Yeah. So a gunshot rings out, so they start running through the soundstage into the bar?
I think it only vaguely qualifies as a soundstage, because I'm pretty sure this is all built outside. It's just, like, standing Paramount assets.
Right.
It's a backlot, not a soundstage.
Backlot. Yeah. That's the term I'm looking for. Yeah. That'll work. All right, so they go in, and there's...
It's Paramount's Edo period area. I've been saving that one.
Oh, okay. Very good. Approve. All right, so Worf and Alexander come in the swinging doors of the saloon, and Alexander helpfully points out, that's the bad guy.
You can tell because he's Mexican.
No, the other one,
Oh, the other one, yes.
Right.
The other guy's just offensively Mexican.
Yeah. Oh, very, yeah, oh my God, he's so Mexican. Wow. You can't just call people Mexican, man. I mean, jeez. You know how offensive that is to call someone Mexican?
He looks like a political cartoon of a mariachi player.
Yeah, written.
No, no, he doesn't. He doesn't have a single label written on him.
Oh, well played.
Oh, so glad they do that. Otherwise, I wouldn't know what these things signify. Jesus Christ. All right, so Alexander points out, that's the bad guy. So Worf walks up and goes, you're wanted for murder, come with me. And the guy stands up and goes, no. So Worf just palms his nose into his brain case.
Welcome
to Earth. And just lays him out in one blow. To which Alexander's like, oh man, you broke it. So that was too easy. You can't just walk in and beat him up and arrest him. It's got to be harder than that. So Alexander ups the difficulty of the game and then resets everything, which is kind of awesome, really. It this episode did make me want to have a holodeck again.
Briefly.
Until, well, we'll see. All right, so Alexander increases the difficulty. Burp a derp a derp. Now we get to retread old stuff.
Let's just take a moment to point out how awkward an actor Alexander is.
Well,
it's like he's played by a kid.
But some child actors, they give you life. Alexander, he just kind of walks like a robot and delivers his lines.
He makes Justin from Turbo look like...
Yeah, exactly.
At least Justin was doing things. I mean,
yeah,
he sucks, but I mean,
Justin
he was crying.
Justin also read lines more naturally.
Yeah.
Now, the actor who plays Alexander was also a regular on the final season, maybe the one before that too, of Family Ties.
Okay.
Just trivia, you know.
Is that before or after this?
I think a little bit before.
Okay.
Trivial.
I don't remember when Family Ties stopped.
They really should have got Alexander's actor to play Data's copycat kid from that one episode.
Well, it would have been too natural. He wouldn't be able to like do the other part where he actually has to act like a human.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because remember, the kid had to actually act like a human at some point. Now, LOL, however. LOL. LOL. L-A-L.
LOL.
LOL. All right, so Worf waddles up to the guy and goes, you're under arrest for murder. And at this time, though, instead of standing up like an idiot, the bad guy grows some balls and is like, oh, really? And is much more aggressive. Walks away from him, takes a shot, and is like, well, I don't think my daddy's going to like that very much. Mm-mm-mm.
So I like the next bit where he has his, you know, thugs come in and one of them smashes Worf over the head with a chair and Worf's just like, huh?
Yeah, did you guys hear something?
There a breeze? Somebody want to close that window?
All right, so El Mexicano pulls out a shotgun.
I notice Worf around tables is kind of like, well, writers are Sentai around lawn furniture.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like Chekhov's table. You know at some point it's going to get smashed. Oh, yeah, that was a Chekhov's table in one of the other episodes we watched recently. All right. So now here's something interesting, and this didn't make any sense to me. So they're sitting there. They get all their weapons up. They're being a lot more aggressive toward Worf. So Eli, the bad guy, comes up, starts looking at Worf, and goes, "God damn you, ugly! Did your mom fuck an armadillo?"
And it's or were you born that way?
Yeah, or something to that effect. And it's just like, wait, they can see the people for what they are. I thought like the characters in the game treated you like normal.
Yeah, he's insulting this normal human being in front of him for being ugly.
Oh, it just actually happens to look like he's part armadillo.
No, the way I interpret it is that the holodeck has the characters react to whatever they see as if it's perfectly normal.
Right, right.
No, I mean, they still see Worf as being alien-looking, but they don't process that as a holy shit, an alien. They say, "No, that's fine. We're used to seeing this."
Right.
So this is appropriate.
So Worf starts kicking ass and is like, "Oh, I'm beginning to see the appeal of this program. I get to perform violence on people much weaker than me." So Eli sits back on the bar with his pistol out and has got him dead to rights. So they leave, I guess. I mean, oh, that's right. He's going to rob him first.
Because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But listen in a cavalry.
And then suddenly Eli's hat jumps off his head like a scared triple. And then, of all people, there's Deanna Troi standing in there with a Winchester and a long coat.
Kind of thinking that.
Yeah, it looks kind of badass, actually.
Well, I'd like to say that Marina Sirtis looks gorgeous in this episode.
Yeah, it kind of just goes to show that the normal wardrobe they picked out for her is the ugliest possible things she could ever wear. And it's times like this when actually, you know, they make some good use of her.
Yeah, you look at her and you're like, wow, she looks great.
I kind of like how out of character this is for her, because she's such a new age pussy most of the time. But apparently she got this fantasy of being a gun-toting badass.
You know how people tend to get a lot more aggressive if they're playing a video game?
Hi, Ben.
And it's just when they're playing a video game?
Oh, bye, Ben. No, in truth, it's more like, hi, all the people Ben plays with.
So, yeah, so Troi apparently likes Westerns because this is the point where I forgot that she's only half Beta Zed. I keep forgetting that her dad was human. So, yeah, her dad told her all these, Wild West stories.
We learned that later, though.
Ancient West stories, whatever, yeah. I think Alexander made a mention of it. So we cut back down to engineering, and there's Data with the tube in his head, and they're trying to, okay, now try taking over in this system. Okay, that worked. Try this system. It's like two idiots lighting their farts on fire. I mean, it's just like the feeling
I
get from the
Data,
scene.
Go to deck 17 and see if you can reverse the gravity. Let's see who we can put on the ceiling.
Okay, have it work. All the female crew members, their clothes teleport 1 foot to the right. All right, so there's some sort of glitch. And Data's like, oh, something's going wrong. I had a power surge. Turning it off. And then he does. That was exciting. Can we do it again?
But then he has a pretty awesome little spinning flip of the tricorder before he puts it back in his tricorder holster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a little cue to the audience that something is amiss. There might actually be a plot in this episode. Maybe. All right, so we cut back down to the Wild West. And there's Eli, the bad guy, sitting in the jail cell playing cards. Worf and Alexander are kind of looking in and basically talking about him, even though he's 2 feet away. And Worf is like,
he's not real people. He's a criminal.
Yeah. So Worf is like, do we kill him and eat him, or how does this work? Alexander's like, no, we just got to hold him until the marshal gets here and he'll take him away to trial in some other town, whatever.
Rapid City.
Sure. Yeah. Which has got to be going
rapid
faster
about this episode.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be going faster than this episode is. So Eli's like, oh, you ain't gonna be happy my daddy gets here. Ooh wee.
Gross.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay.
And then Troi starts smoking.
Yes! She has like a black and mild. Whoa!
So I like this part where Worf's all like, well, I'm sure the three of us can handle anything that comes our way. And Troi's all, Well, I didn't exactly sign on for this. I was just passing through, and Worf's all, Deanna, I would appreciate some support here.
Right. She's like, well, then play along, dipshit. We're playing characters. Roll the fucking D20 and see if you hit.
Counselor Durango.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing I like about this, at least in the early part. Worf is just, like, so uncomfortable and out of place playing a character on the holodeck. Like, 6 years in, and he still hasn't really gotten used to doing this aspect of the recreational stuff.
Right.
Well, if I remember correctly, all of Worf's other holodeck programs
are just blindly beating shit up, like, you know,
yes.
Worf and so. Yeah.
Right.
Or being
either
stabbed
that,
with
or it's
sticks.
Just either that, or he just has a program that is his job.
He probably does.
Except something happens.
No, I'm enjoying imagining.
He has a program that is just identical to real life, except people listen to him.
Yes.
Actually,
it's the day's events, but when he suggests raise shields, Picard says raise shields.
Actually, I was going to go one further and say that his fantasy program is that an alien will beam aboard the bridge or something, toss away a security guy, and then when he goes to fight it, he actually beats it up instead of it kicking his ass. That he actually wins a physical fight occasionally. I think that would be his fantasy. It's like, I could take out a Borg.
But no, now I kind of just want a game that's like Dynasty Warriors Worf.
Yes.
The first stage is like Ferengi, and then it goes up from there.
Or a Bolian or something.
Yeah. Yeah. They really smell bad on the inside, though. You gotta be careful when you kill on those guys. All right. So, yeah, Troy's like, look, I'm playing a mysterious stranger. Just play along. This is how this works. Get over it. Oh, and I ain't doing this for free. I need 500 schmeckles.
We live in a cashless society.
And then Tits McGee walks in, who's the... I'm not sure how to feel about this woman.
She was the fat woman from Showgirls. They kept popping her tits out.
Oh, well... She's kind of stereotyped herself, hasn't she?
Well, it's not literally her. I'm just saying her character.
Oh, okay. I thought it was actually
the
same actress.
She's the fat prostitute mom.
Yes. So she comes over the
show. So the mom?
Oh, damn.
Well, yes.
So your mom. All right. So she comes in. She's apparently like the love interest to the sheriff character, and much to Worf's disappointment. And of course.
It's a note to self. Kill Barclay.
Yeah. I gotta say, though, that Troy has an almost Jadzia Dax-like level of enjoyment at watching other people suffer in this. Look at her smiling and just relishing every minute of this.
Well, she it's her day off. She doesn't have to care about people anymore.
Yeah. The counselor, she could be a bitch. And she is, too. It's really awesome.
This is her day off when she gets to enjoy sensing people's emotions and not having to help them through it.
Yeah, I was going to say, her fun time is giving people complexes.
Yeah.
Like any psychiatrist.
Right.
Job security.
Yeah, like a fireman who starts fires.
So, like early firemen.
Exactly, right. So we cut to Picard's chambers, his room. What a weird set he has. What a weird, weird room. So he sits down.
He has two front doors.
Yeah. And like plants and sunflowers and stuff.
Well, nobody accused him of being a good decorator.
Yeah, that's true. So he sits down and opens up his iTunes and tells the computer to play a playlist. So futuristic!
Specifically, he's telling the computer to play back the stuff he was playing earlier in recording when everybody was interrupting him.
Right.
Computer, play Rush.
Fly my night away from here. Fly my night again. God, I could go for some Q-bert right now. No? All right. So then suddenly the song changes from this nice little piccolo melody to the Slavonic dances, which is, I guess, more, I don't know, different?
It's more metal.
Yeah, Picard is very annoyed by this and doesn't understand what's going on. Okay, yes, very concerning. It's played the wrong song, sweet Jesus. So then we cut up to one of the side rooms, and Beverly.
Oh, this is the play rehearsal, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I love Beverly's... that this opens up on her face palming at her crew.
Yes. Yes.
So they're face palming, and then there's Riker, the Yellow Ranger, and the Green Ranger.
Riker wearing the one civilian costume they have for him.
Yeah, he does look great, though, I gotta say.
Well, yes, it does take a lot of material to cover him.
But it's also been, like, his bed clothes before.
Ah, well, maybe he's like a person going to Walmart.
Riker was the one you would just go around in his pajamas on the day off.
Felis catus, your taxonomic nomenclature. An endothermic quadruped, carnivorous by nature.
What the shit?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck you
now,
reading?
Hasn't this... hasn't this poem showed up before?
Yes.
Yep. Yes. And the thing is, I recognized it instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And they very quickly figure out, too, wait a minute, this is Data's poetry. What the fuck is going on? And I like how Riker's like, I'm reading my lines. What else would I be reading? He's all like antagonistic about it.
What are you reading? The dialogue.
Yeah. Well, you told me to read. Jesus.
She's like, what? No, you're not. Let me look at it. And says, yeah, look, see, this is Data's poem. He knew all along it wasn't a dialogue. He was just fucking with her.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is hilarious. So they quickly they realize, wait a minute, that's not good.
I kind of want the whole B-plot to just be the rehearsal for this play, because this one little scene just makes it look like magic.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll pull it together in the last minute and they'll all get standing ovations.
I was going to point out what a coincidence it is that an episode that Patrick Stewart directs has a subplot about preparing for a play.
And is a holodeck of a character having to act like another character.
Yeah.
It's acting within acting within acting within acting. Oh my God. Acting. And he makes a reference to, I'm not a good actor.
The only thing it's missing is Shakespeare, really.
Yeah, you're right. That is a glaring omission.
Maybe that would have been too on the nose.
But what was the play?
I don't think we ever really said what the play was.
I guess it was probably.
No, Beverly said the title. It was Something for Breakfast.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, what is for breakfast or what's for breakfast or something like that.
I think specifically it is Something for Breakfast.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, not like, quote, Something for Breakfast.
Yes,
right?
No, that wasn't a placeholder word. That was right, okay, literally the title she said.
It was, quote, Something for Breakfast, close quote.
Yes, thank you. I'm a programmer. I'm very literal. You gotta punctuate.
Left bracket.
Right. syntax error.
Squared or which type of bracket?
The one with the pointy end.
There you go. All right, so whatever. We cut down to engineering, speaking of nerds. And Geordi is unsuccessfully trying to put an isolinear chip back into a pad. Clumsy bastard.
He's blind!
Well, maybe he shouldn't be an engineer then.
It's not Geordi's fault, it's USB.
But yeah, he's got to flip it around. It doesn't work. He's got to flip around again, then it will work. So Beverly's down there going, okay, what's going on? And then they are starting to figure out, oh, yeah, sorry, we just overwrote some of the things. Something weird's going on.
With Data's brain.
Data, yeah, Spock's brain. And Beverly's biggest concern is, so you're going to let me know when we get the playback, right? I mean, I really need that play. He's like, look, critical systems are being overwritten with useless information. Yeah, but what about the play?
No, actually, it was just the secondary systems that were affected.
Kind of need those too.
That was nothing important, though. Just, you know, library computer retrieval, recreational programming.
What, like holodecks?
Waste the replicators.
Disposal. Yeah, the replicators.
Which
that's
are now
kind of
out.
Important. That's where their food is.
Look, they could all stand to lose a little weight. Have you seen Riker lately?
Oh, damn.
Look, he would probably just scarf up that cat food.
But, you know, the matter supply is still there. They can just eat it raw.
Yeah.
Oh, Jiminy.
I mean, I'm sure that's, you know, food grade matter to start with, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's probably made of carbon atoms or something.
Well,
it's carbonated?
Partly. Yeah. Carbonated cat food. That'll give your cat something to do for a while. You ever heard cat burps?
Yes.
Yep. Smelled them too.
Yeah, I would imagine your cat would sit back on its haunches and burp and then scratch its own belly. Can't imagine where he learned it from. So Alexander's walking down the street, doop-a-doop-a-doo, got a bag full of money, nothing could possibly happen, nothing could possibly happen. Oh, well, kidnapped!
Well, it couldn't, because it's a holodeck, I mean.
Yeah.
All things being equal, that's pretty safe.
So they grab a miner and take him to a mine.
Ha! Puns.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, okay, so they slowly walk through.
Don't grab miners.
Yeah. They got 7-year-old in bondage over here. So they take him to the leader bad guy, to the BBEG, Big Bad Evil Guy, which turns out to be Brent Spiner. Not Data. It's actually Brent Spiner.
Someone asked him for an autograph and he lost it.
Yeah, so Brent Spider crawls out of the shadows in this deep, dark hole in the ground. And it's Data, but with a mustache and a bad attitude and a bad accent. He talks like his character on Night Court. Remember that?
I remember he was on Night Court once in a while. I just don't remember the character he played.
He played a yokel who talked like this. It was really outrageous.
Well, that's more when Brent Spiner's doing the next character. When he's playing Frank here, he's a little bit more collected.
Right. All right, so we're back. We're on the ship, and Data is holding Spot and ordering him some food that he specially formulated, to which Spot goes, "Bitch, I'm a cat. I don't need your shit." And walks away. Oh, my God. Okay.
Data responds with the Data version of, "You'll fucking eat the shit when you get hungry enough."
Yes. That's so funny.
But well, Spot's not really, done screwing up his day.
Are there ever any Spot episodes?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Was there an episode where Spot took over the ship? And, they relied on him to, save everybody because everyone else was affected by something? Or is that just Data?
Oh, snap.
Yeah. There was a time Spot turned into an iguana.
Ooh. Bamoosh, you varmint. So Spot keeps jumping up on his table while he's trying to type.
His keyboard, yes.
Yes, on his keyboard, which they clearly had put food there because he's got food in his mouth when he pulls the cat away. Jeez, guys, come on. So, yeah, so Data starts speaking in the bad Wild West accent without realizing it. So we cut back down to the saloon. Piano player setting the mood. Oh my God.
So Worf accosts the fat girl and says, "Have you seen my son?" "I don't know. Fuck you. You didn't bang me."
Right. I bet you're banging some other bitch on some other holodeck, aren't you?
I'll just be catty for a while.
Yeah.
And she gives him a sherry,
which he drinks. If you notice, I was watching that. He goes, "Ooh, a sherry," and he actually just drinks the whole thing.
It's booze.
Why would he order Klingon fire wine? He knows they don't have any.
He doesn't know what they do have.
It's Earth in the 19th century. He could pretty much assume they don't have Klingon food and drink.
But he doesn't know what they do have.
Milk, apparently. Oh, sorry.
He should have ordered prune juice.
Yes, he should have. They might as well have had that.
Worf might know what they had back then because he was raised by humans.
Yeah.
Well, he was raised by, a Russian family, so all he would know is vodka.
Good enough.
Surely they didn't have vodka in the Wild West.
Heavens no. So Data bad guy with his cronies comes walking in. Introduces himself to the sheriff, and Worf just thinks it's Data, so he keeps calling him Commander. Again, not realizing that people are playing characters in this.
Worf's bad at this.
Yeah, I do not want to play Dungeons & Dragons with Worf.
Although I guess it's kind of like Bashir's reaction in the episode last week, where it's like, how many people are going to come intrude on my holodeck time?
Right.
This is bad enough when it was only my son knowing I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I'm never going to hear the end of this now.
So as Worf is sipping on his sherry, which is, you watch him, he's just drinking it.
Uh-huh.
The bad.
No, it just makes me think, like, from watching a lot of Frasier, he should just, you know, Worf be in Frasier drinking sherry with Frasier and Niles.
Ugh.
Frasier.
Yes, Frasier. Frasier. I should know. I'm Frasier.
So the bad guy says, "Let my boy go." And Worf's like, "No." He's like, "Well, let's make a trade." And Worf's like, "I'm not going to trade with you." He's like, "Oh, but I've got your boy. Or I got your deputy, rather." "Oh, okay. Well, in that case, yeah, let's trade."
No, you're kind of skipping some steps
there. I am. Oh, God. I'm trying to make this go faster.
Okay, so Worf says, you know, he does not negotiate with criminals after Data Hollister says he has, or Hollander, whatever, says he has Alexander. And Worf starts to leave and is like, "You better not walk out that door," as everybody starts drawing on him.
Well, Data grabs him, to which Worf winces and almost goes down to one knee. Because it's like, "Well, wait a minute, why the—" And then Worf is like, "Dude, what are you doing? That hurt." You know, not realizing that, this character has the strength of Data and is probably bulletproof too. So Worf goes, the strength of 10 toasters. He dives out the door and dodges all these bullets. Well, not all the bullets. So he runs back to the sheriff shack where Deanna's sitting there drawing on nothing. And
she's,
I like how Worf,
fun.
Worf comes in and locks the door because that'll keep the bullets out. And she's like, "Oh my God, you've been shot." And he like looks down and like notices, "Oh yeah, that sucks." Anyway.
He's a clown.
So they try to end the program. Nothing happens. They try to contact Picard. Nothing happens. Try to call security. Nothing happens. So she takes her dirty, sweaty, gross handkerchief and wraps it around his bloody holes in his arm.
Klingons
exactly. Coughs on it first.
Klingons probably aren't susceptible to infections.
And if they are, they deserve to die.
Yes.
That's true. Could you imagine Klingon gonorrhea? Ooh.
I think that's the black stuff in their forehead ridges, actually.
Ew.
So around this time, they look over and notice that their prisoner is also Data now.
Yep.
And he's shuffling those cards a lot more effectively than he was earlier in the episode. Because if you go back and look, they made a point of showing him awkwardly shuffling by making little stacks and just kind of, you know, pushing them together.
Yeah, he's just like moving the cards around was what he was doing. So now Worf grabs the new Data Ellis or Eli or whatever.
Data Jr.
Yeah, whatever. Grabs him through the bars and like, "Tell me where my son is. Damn you. Acting." Okay, whatever. I'm not going to tell him where.
You know where your son is. He's in the small room with you.
Yeah, it's like 20 feet by 20 feet. What the hell?
Yes, but there's a treadmill under their feet, so no matter how much they walk, they'll never get there.
Damn it. So Troy gives us some much-deserved exposition and says, "We have to carry out the program, then it'll end automatically, so we just have to play along and do it."
And hope Alexander doesn't die in the meantime.
And right. Hope we don't get shot.
All right. Yeah, Troy looks fantastic.
Well, she has a good hairstyle this episode, too.
Yeah. That and her duster looks pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so now Picard's been apprised of the situation by Geordi and Data. Okay, how these systems go down, they know what the problem is. Now they just got to fix it. They just got to restart shit and reboot it, and they'll be fine. It's just, okay, that was hard and dramatic. And then there's Picard wearing his velour jacket. Oh, yeah.
It's casual Friday.
And Geordi and Data are just basically explaining, okay, that's what happened. We get it. They replaced all the data, you know, from Data's brain, and that's why the play is there. That's why your music got
replaced. They replaced all the data with Data.
Yes. Make it stop. Yeah, Picard does have the wherewithal to ask, well, can you fix it? It's like, dude, yeah, that's why we're in here talking to you.
So how long is it going to take?
I reckon it'll take about 2 hours. And everyone's like, whoa, what the hell? There's some cute scenes in this and some cute ideas that would be a lot more entertaining if they were. There's just something missing with this episode. There's some soul or something missing in this episode. Yeah, there's no stakes. There's no. These are jokes, which are usually used to relieve tension. There is no tension in this episode, so they just fall flat.
Yeah.
So Data goes moseying out of the room and then fake spits into a fake spittoon and then walks out.
He saw a pot. He must spit into it.
I do like the looks that Picard and Riker share, though. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Riker's very good at giving the bemused, raised eyebrow smirk without saying anything. So we got back down to the holodeck, and now we see Troy glance over and look at Data's hands as he's shuffling the cards. What is with the hair in his arms? Oh my god, he looks like a
werewolf. Yeah, I was wondering if that
did they glue that on?
What is it? It's like his arms have pubic hair. What the fuck?
Yes, is that Brent Spiner's natural arm hair, or like, you know, did they roll him around in a rug?
Or roll around in the bottom of a barber's chair at the end of the day. What?
Well, they just put the makeup on him, and then he had to pick up Spot.
It's weird looking.
Do they just have like a big shake and bake bag full of hair that they put his arm in?
Also, the map that Troy's looking at is clearly Nevada.
Okay.
So, not in California.
No, I'm. That's not Nevada.
Sure,
that's Arizona.
You sure? Okay, we gotta go to the map. We'll look at the maps.
Between the two of you, I am more inclined to believe Fort Max.
So am I. So that's with us two of us. All right, so Worf goes, I'm going to go do something even more boring off screen. I'm going to go question the townsfolk. So he goes question the townsfolk, which is, as someone who's played D&D, this is exactly the kind of thing you go, okay, you spent 2 hours questioning townsfolk, now you're back. We're not going to roleplay that out. You just do it off screen.
And you accomplished nothing.
Yeah, you accomplished nothing. They did say that, a couple of people saw him get abducted. And like, you see the deputy get abducted and you don't go tell the sheriff immediately? What a bunch of assholes.
They don't want to get involved.
You didn't ask.
Yeah. Oh, it's the ship's computer being helpful. Great. So Troy realizes that, all the Data copies have Data's abilities. To which they go, fuck.
But Worf has a plan.
A really stupid plan.
Yep.
We'll give in.
So there's a knock at the door. They open it up, and there's Hollander. Colander, Hollister.
Frank.
Data Frank comes in. Data bad guy comes in, and Worf relieves him of his weapon so they can parlay. Oh, God, what was the point of this scene again? Basically just give you one more chance to give my boy back or something?
Yes.
And Worf says, okay, sure.
Oh, yeah, this is when they decide to do the swap. God damn, this doesn't need to last 5 minutes. I do like when he goes over and Brent Spiner talks to himself, which is cute.
They did the compositing really well with this split screen.
Really well, because his hat goes over the hand.
That, and like they got the eye lines matched up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the composites they do in Star Trek, it's really obvious they're not looking at each other or anything.
Yeah. Right.
They nailed this one, though.
I assume they probably had something with, like, a printout of Brent Spiner's face.
A tennis ball painted Data skin color.
They just wrapped a towel around Data's face and pulled the makeup off and wrapped it around a mannequin head in reverse.
God. So, basically, it goes...
Oh, no, they had the Data mannequin head from the end of season 5. Yeah. They probably just put that on a stick, and, yeah.
Right. Because
that thing showed up a couple more times, too.
Perfect. So he has a little conversation with his son. He's like, oh, they're treating me so bad, you gotta help me, Daddy. He's like, I'll get you out of here. All right, so I'll meet you at town. You go here, I'll go there, then we'll do the swap, and the stranger, Troy, isn't allowed to be there. And oh, my God.
I think it was about this point it was so that I realized I wasn't really paying attention anymore.
Yeah, it's taking effort right now for me to be doing it.
I think by this point in the episode, I was out of French fries.
Sweet Jesus, how did you survive?
I think I still have a hamburger left.
I don't even remember how this episode resolves itself.
Well, hopefully we'll get to it in about 10 minutes. So Troy's like, look, I've read these stories. The bad guy's going to double cross you. It always happens. You're going to go there.
We made an honorable agreement.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, this is the ancient West. These are a bunch of humans. You know you can't trust them. Racist. And because the safety protocols are off, you know, he actually has a chance of getting killed. But again, I think I'm pretty sure a Klingon could take a bullet.
He already has.
Right, he could take a couple more. He's got more hit points than that. All right, so we're back down in engineering, and Riker comes striding up to them. And you can see him resisting the urge to plump his foot right on Data's shoulder. Hike that leg all the way up so he can talk to Geordi. Oh, my goodness. All right, so they figure out that the Old West subroutine programs got into Data's head, too, which is why he's talking so funny. All right, so they're dumping the memory and reloading everything, slowly purging the system. It's going to take like another couple of hours, whatever. Nobody cares. And no one is like, hey, have you guys seen Worf? Have you guys seen Troy?
Well, we did mention together either that like the holodecks aren't working quite right.
Right. They did mention that earlier, that those aren't working right. And then they go, well, maybe we should see if there's anybody in a holodeck, see if they're affected by any of this. Because other systems, you know, maybe they're affected.
You okay there, Fort Max?
Right in the ear. I can
get an over a cold.
Okay.
Your ear feels all moist. Ugh. All right, so back on holiday.
It's just the spirit of Paladin joining us this week.
Okay, get him out of me.
That's a good intro quote.
Yeah, I'll take that.
All right, so Tits McGee shows up with a telegraph machine. And
you don't want to know what she had to do to get that.
Spoilers. That's like an ancient texting machine.
Yeah, spoilers. Suck a dick, I guess.
Fucking.
And it's like he uses the telegraph machine to open up his communicator, and that's it.
Right. He just needed the knife to pop open the case.
Well, he ends up using more than that, but that's the part he's excited about first.
Right. So he gets a telegraph machine because apparently any technology is technology. It doesn't really matter anything. So he rigs up his communicator in a telegraph machine to make a personal force field.
Uh-huh.
Well, he can do that because the telegraph machine is made of holograms, which are very high-tech.
Well, see, I had a slightly different take on it. Like, Worf knows that even with the safety protocols off, this is all still just holodeck matter. So if you disrupt the field holding it together, it'll just, you know, evaporate. So all he really has to do is make a field that disrupts that energy.
But the bullets are replicated. They're not force fields. That's the problem. Just like the telegraph machine is replicated, so it's physical matter. It's not a force field where he thinks he's touching it. They actually...
But it's holodeck matter. So, you know, if it loses its...
Made out of Riker spunk.
Yeah. Oh. I was hoping to go the whole episode without that coming up, but damn it.
Authentic Riker holo semen. Riker's magic coming bullets. Up. Riker's magic bullets.
Pew, I can impregnate somebody at 50 yards. All right, so we're back on the street, and it's clearly not California. And they step out with Eli and Alexander to do the swap. And, of course, the bad guy has, like, snipers and other shooters, like, hidden all through the town so they can shoot everybody.
Who are all Data.
Who are all now Data.
Including our Mexican stereotype friend from the start of the episode.
Yes, which is a shame because I miss him already.
Although Data wearing the Mexican mustache is pretty great.
I wish there would have been an opportunity to have Data imitating the actor.
And there's even, like, unshaven Data, which is even funnier when you think about it. It's, like, all scruffy looking. Okay, so they do the swap.
This episode is terrible.
They walk by each other. So I like the fact that the Mexican guy with the sawed-off shotgun is up on the roof, like, 100 yards away, where it'll do no damage whatsoever. All right.
He's wrong for this mission.
Yes. Shogun melee. God damn it. So the bad guy goes, get him now! And Alexander runs and hides, and they all start shooting, and Worf hits the button, and the force field deflects the bullets, and boo. Exactly.
There's nothing funnier than the close-up of Worf's belt with the communicator with the two little wires leading out of it to the copper coil.
So the Mexican goes, Señor Frank! And tosses him an extra pistol, because his pistol ran out of bullets, to which bad guy Data deftly catches it.
Wonder how many times they had to film that.
I don't know. So he grabs it, Worf quick draws, and shoots the gun out of his hand. Which makes sense, because this is a holodeck adventure, and of course that's what would happen.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I mean, it doesn't matter how good a shot you are, that's what's going to happen, because you're in a holodeck playing a story. So, yes. To a bad guy Data goes, fine, shoot me. And he's about to do it when he looks over at Alexander, and Alexander gives him the biggest puppy dog, biggest targ eyes I've ever seen.
Puppy targ.
Yeah. Puppy targ eyes. And he goes, oh, never mind. Just get out of here and never come back. And then Data, and then two people that are in Data makeup, weird, they all just kind of saunter out of town. I guess they catch an Uber around the corner.
Oh, and Troy was hanging around somewhere, too.
Yeah, she kept one of them.
She wasn't allowed.
That's why she was hiding.
Yeah. Yeah, she's rocking those leather pants, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Hello, counselor. All right. So
they get inside. The day is saved thanks to the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, they get inside, and, well, story's concluded. It should be done now. Okay. All right, let's go.
End program.
But what's left?
And then the whole buildup to this entire episode, and I'm not going to argue this point. This is the whole point of this episode. We see Brent Spiner as Data dressed up like a can-can girl with a dress down, pushing his tits up. And she comes out. She's got the mole on the chin and everything. And this fake chest. What the fuck is up with that? Oh, my God. She comes fluttering down the stairs.
and then wraps
herself around Worf.
This is not honorable.
He just looks away like he's going to vomit. Which, thank God, is the end of the program. It ends, and we see the welcoming grid of the holodeck.
And Worf is going to have therapy for several weeks to deal with this.
It's a good thing they have a counselor on board.
Right next to him already.
Yes. It can start immediately. So there's a cool shot of an old Oberth class. It's Oberth class. And let me get this straight. So you have a Galaxy class, one of the most massive starships in the Federation fleet that can go for extended exploration, has room for families, and they're getting resupplied by an Oberth class? A small science ship that holds like 20 people?
A ship with no deflector dish or Bessard collectors?
Yes. That is
a ship with two holes that are not connected to each other?
Yeah.
Do they beam to the engineering hole? Is that how that works?
Spacewalk.
Man, I don't even know.
Is there a fire pole?
or is it completely segregated?
Whee! All right, so whatever.
They're two separate crews. They never meet.
There's like Romulans on one side and Klingons on the other, and no one knows. They don't even allow them to have like video conferencing, just audio. All right, whatever. So they purge all the systems. Everything's back to normal. Herpa derpa derp. Ship looks great, though, I gotta say. Oh, man. All right, so we have a sweet little scene of Alexander all tuckered out, sleeping like a robot with his arms straight down his sides. That's weird. Worf comes in, glares at him, and is about to walk away. Alexander smells him and says, Daddy, do you want to play again? And Worf's like, ugh, fine, yes, I'll be your sheriff. And everyone gets cavities and dies.
But we get a cool shot of the Enterprise before the episode ends.
Of it sailing off into the sunset.
A super rad shot of the Enterprise.
That looks almost so great in the remaster.
Yes, yeah. It does. It's almost as good as Brent Spiner in drag. Yeah, Worf puts on a hat, herp a derp. Who cares? Yeah, great, great ship shot at the end. And that was it. Fistful of Datas. We survived. Woohoo!
Did we, though?
Not everybody cheer at once now. Not everyone talk about how great the episode was all at once.
This is one of those episodes I'd never watched because, well, one, I hate Wild West stuff. It's boring. So,
then why did you suggest this?
Well, then, but, you know, I did not suggest this when you suggested it.
No, I said it existed.
However, since this episode got multiple toy figures released for it, I assume this is one of those memorable episodes of people who don't like Westerns.
No, this is one of those episodes where there was a lot of costumes which let them release variant figures to pad the line out.
Well, yes. Having watched the episode, I realized that no, nobody likes this episode. I wasn't wrong to not want to watch it in the first place.
Did they ever make a toy of Riker in his, civilian attire?
I don't...
No, because I think they would have been. They wouldn't have been able to sell those at Spencer's as sex toys.
They did do one of him disguised as an alien.
Right, and First Contact.
No, it was from Next Generation.
Yeah, from First Contact.
Oh, you mean the episode of First Contact. Yeah.
Yeah, Star Trek First Contact.
Oh my god. You fucking nerds.
I want to say the clothing he was in is similar to his casual clothes.
I think it's more textured, though. Like, if you think about those, protective drop cloths, like, it looked like the costume in that episode was made of that. Whereas this looks more like satin or grocery bags or something.
It's a tarp. It's a tarp! All ships retreat. Alright, well, yeah, see, it could have been a great episode. So whose fault is this? Can we just blame Patrick Stewart for this since he directed it?
Well, he didn't write it, though. That's
he directed it.
But
if
he
it was
didn't
directed
write it. I mean, even the best director can only make what they have of what they're given.
Man, you can make people ad-lib. You can change stuff on the fly.
Like,
you have final say.
I think Patrick Stewart was doing the best he could with this because you had shots like Beverly's epic facepalm. I don't think that was probably in the script.
On Twitter, Ollie Whisper just tweeted at me that apparently Stewart directed this and he was super proud and defensive about this episode.
We gotta fuck with him. I think we should all text Pat Stu. We should tweet at him.
No, leave the poor old man alone. Let him have his pizza.
This is your fault.
Let him have his pizza in peace.
Yeah, maybe we can get Ian McKellen to make fun of him for us.
There you go.
They all hang out together. Oh, well. So that was Fistful of Datas. Great concept. Could have been really funny and entertaining. Could have been a classic episode. It just was so flat. It was so flat. It was, there's no danger. There's no threat of anything. There's no growth. There was nothing interesting happening. I mean, they didn't play up Worf's alienness to the whole situation. I mean, it just... It's a burger. When you go to a restaurant, you get a burger and it looks amazing. And you bite it and it's bland. That's what this episode is like.
Been there.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that thing looks awesome. Look at the cheese. It's got all the stuff on it. And the meat's all perfectly cooked. You know,
but
you take a bite.
No salt.
Yeah, you take a bite and it just tastes like nothing. That's what this episode was like.
I had that burger at BotCon.
Did they charge you $80 for it?
Well, it wasn't at the show. It was, you know, one of the places a couple of blocks away downtown Louisville.
I pronounce Louisville. Sorry.
No, Louisville was just a couple miles from here, so.
It's like Lewis.
Yeah.
All right. So next we have Voyager. And it's a Doctor episode, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Wait, which one is this?
This is the one where he daydreams.
No, this isn't the one where he daydreams. It's the one where he generates a hologram family.
No, I've changed it.
Okay, you might have told me that.
It's in the show notes.
Oh, I see you changed it just now.
And actually, I've discussed this with you a couple of times about how the episode Tinker Tanner Dr. Spy is really good, actually.
Yes, I didn't understand that you meant that to be a replacement for this.
All right, so...
I just thought you wanted to do this episode at some point in the natural course
wait a
of
second.
Podcasting.
We can't do this Tinker Tanner now. It's not a holodeck episode. It's just a hologram episode.
Okay, change it back.
I don't remember. Real life, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, we're still doing Tinker Tanner Dr. Spy at some point because Janeway acts like a slut in it. Actually, all the ladies act like a slut in it.
There, I fixed it.
So.
Okay, so, all right. Well,
it's great.
Yeah. Well, it's a Doctor episode, so it's going to be good.
Yes, but also shows that the rest of the cast is actually really enjoyable when they get to act and they're not being forced to be their characters.
You're talking about Tinker Tanner Dr. Spy, though.
I am still talking about that one, yes.
That has nothing to do with the episode we're going to watch next week.
No.
I want to say there's a B-plot to that episode, but I can't remember what it is.
Which one?
Real Life.
All right, so, okay, so Real Life episode, season 3, episode 22. Oh, okay, so this is an actual holodeck episode.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Cool.
And we have the best holodeck episode for the end of the month.
Oh, yeah.
Until we all watch and decide, you know, this really wasn't that good after all.
That's the story of the podcast.
Yeah.
That is the podcast. This is going to be fun. Oh, God, what have we done?
Who would have thought that things we kind of enjoy watching, like, just by ourselves... quietly without talking about don't make for good discussions sometimes.
Right. It's like, can you imagine a podcast that's based around documentaries? we sit around and watch documentaries on Netflix and we talk about that. Oh yeah, here's the part where that lizard eats that fly.
I bet you that exists.
Oh my god, that would be so boring. Because there's only so much you can do with that.
Depends what the documentary is about.
Yeah.
If it's a documentary about, like, aberrant sexual behavior.
So, family home movies.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly.
But no, I'm thinking like, boring-ass nature documentaries where it's just, like, they follow, like, a leopard and raising her two cubs for, like, an hour. You know, that's...
Well, no, what you do then is, like, you start picking apart the editing of it. Like, how you can see that, you know, these are totally not the same cubs that were in the earlier part of this documentary.
Yeah, you can see the green screen or the special effects they use a couple times, and that's clearly a dude in a suit, you know. It's clearly just a person in a suit.
See, there's totally ways to go with this.
Yeah, I think that's a one shot though. I don't think can run a whole podcast that way. It'd be fun to try though.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, you're right. I was lying. I was just straight up lying.
And you're terrible at it.
I am. Or am I? I am.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, well, yeah, I got nothing else. I'm spent. I mean, that was Fistful of Datas. Now I just have a fistful of regrets.
And you're spent.
Yes. I got a handful of what could have been children. I got one snort out of that. Okay.
All right. Well, replace that with a handful of pills and you'll be fine.
Yeah, no shit. Handful of vodka.
I
don't think vodka works that way.
Thank you. I was going to say, I'm no expert in vodka, but I'm glad our resident, you know, honor student in vodka could weigh in on that.
Honor student of vodka. Yes, I've got a BA in vodka.
Actually, I got my degree from Sally Struthers.
Oh, so you get
it. You want to drink more vodka? Sure. We all do.
We all do.
No, Mickey has a BAL in vodka, a blood alcohol level.
Yeah. So I went wine tasting this weekend.
Speaking of blood alcohol.
Yes. I drank more wine this weekend. I have.
Aren't you supposed to spit that out?
No, not in California, sweetie.
Oh, okay.
Swallow.
Yeah, you swallow in California.
Sounds fun.
Oh my God. No, yeah, these are old white people. No, they're swallowing that wine and they're driving just fine these windy little hilly roads.
Oh, I remember my aunt's wedding where my grandfather was drinking the whole night and then drove himself and my grandmother home, and me and my dad were driving behind them, and it was terrible.
Oh, God. I mean, because they were old or because they were drunk?
Because he was drunk.
Oh, okay.
Because he was drunk and like hell if he was going to let anybody drive him home.
Oh, yeah. I get mistaken for a waiter 3 times in the span of about 30 seconds.
Did you take people's orders?
I almost did. I made the joke. It's like, I'll help you out. Depends on what the tips are going to be. And they looked at me slightly mortified. And I kept walking, and then hopefully they realized that I wasn't a waiter there. I'm serious. It was weird.
I demand to see the manager.
I demand you to go fuck yourself. Oh, well, I never. No. Flush the pearls. They start chugging wine. Oh, yeah. This is like Eastern Valley, Shenandoah Valley wine country in California. The snootiest, whitest people you've ever seen in your fucking life.
Do they at least give you food when you go to one of those things?
Some of the wineries have little bistros and little places to get sandwiches or pizzas or something. But
most
of them,
drinking that much, you really need some food in your stomach.
Yeah, and we hadn't eaten all day, so we were just drinking wine, drinking port, drinking red wine, white wine, Rieslings.
XP, I can answer this question for you. When rich people get together and they eat food, they actually eat our crackers with butter spread on them.
Or maybe cheese if you're lucky. But yes.
Cheese.
Yes, but saltines with butter.
Yeah, pretty much.
But cheese.
Butt cheese? I don't know if they have butt cheese.
The cheese comes from the other side, from the dick.
Oh, okay.
The easy cheese, the spray cheese in the cans. Mm-hmm. They feel like a smegma version.
You'll be a million. That's your million-dollar idea, smegma in the can.
Yeah.
Why don't they just make the squeezy cheese thing, but in the shape of a penis?
Yes. Oh,
white cheddar.
And it's got like a pump action. You have to like pump it up like a soap thing. White cheddar.
Coming from novelty shops everywhere.
It wouldn't have like a cap. It has like some saran wrap over the tip you have to slide down.
Great. Now I'm hungry. Thanks, guys.
So, like, it has a seal. It has a safety seal on the top of it first. We have to cut that off with a sharp knife.
Oh, my God.
And then afterward, yeah, you have to put plastic wrap over the top to keep it fresh.
Jesus.
I mean, you should see how I open bottles of salad dressing.
With your teeth out, imagine. With the whole thing in your mouth and then turn it, you know, to get the cap off. Ranch all leaking out between your lips.
I've seen that video. We've had more fun talking about smegma in the past 5 minutes than we did about the whole episode.
Yeah, it tells you a lot about the episode, doesn't it?
And whatever the hell we were talking about for the, like, 25 minutes at the start of the episode before we started talking about the episode.
Whatever.
I think it was also something gross. I don't really remember, though.
Yeah, I've kind of forgotten as well. That's probably for the best. I'm not even going to listen to it when I go and edit the show.
It'll be a surprise.
Yes, it's preferable if it's a surprise when I get asked about it later.
Yes, when the cops come knocking on your door.
Plausible deniability. Plus, I slur enough of my words that I could be drunk during the recording of this.
I thought that was a prerequisite. I thought you got mad at us if we weren't drunk. I'm trying as hard as I can.
If Mickey drinks just the right amount before podcasting, it's really entertaining.
Yeah, he's actually funny.
If you drink before podcasting, it's unsettling.
Like I said, I still want to attain that perfect high of drunk and caffeinated. Oh, I missed that.
Don't forget the carbonation.
Pour coffee grounds into your vodka.
Don't tempt me.
Could you brew coffee with vodka?
Oh, dear.
I thought if you heated alcohol, it like denatured or something.
I think it evaporates, actually.
It becomes artificial?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a vodka scientist. I just play one.
Well, maybe you could just like brew really concentrated coffee normally and mix that with the vodka. It'd be a little bit weaker, but you know.
If you peed in like a whiskey barrel for like a whole year, would it ferment into like a nice mash?
No, I think it would just react down into ammonia.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that's like regular whiskey then.
And then if you add enough blue coloring to it, you have Windex.
Oh. I mean, why would I have to add blue color to it?
Yeah, isn't it naturally blue? What's wrong with you? Jiminy. All right. Well, I'm spent.
Yeah,
I'm
you
going.
Mentioned that before.
Yeah. Well, I got a second wind.
You're just working it till it fully softened.
No.
Until it's raw and pulpy.
Right, yeah. Till it's spongy and bruised. The spirit is willing, the flesh is spongy and bruised.